you have time for a few questions. I'll stretch and ask questions.
Thank you, Ken. So one of the things that I haven't been able to articulate well enough, maybe I haven't looked into it enough, in conversations where I'm trying to encourage a positive view of I don't know more, would be the question of the Assembly of First Nations. Mm-hmm. And people have sort of said, like, well, why don't these people go to the Assembly of First Nations and raise their issues? You know, like, that's what it's there for. That's what they're coming at me with, and I haven't been able to figure out how to counter that. I'm wondering what that organization means to you and to the movement, and what's a good rebuttal?
Well, my perspective on the AFN is that, I can always say this respectfully without sounding rude or condescending, the original intention of the AFN was to be an advocacy body for Indigenous, specifically First Nations issues, and to be able to bring forth our concerns of what's happening at a national level. However, over the years, that's changed. The original intent of that organization has changed, and it's become co-opted by government agenda. Because the AFN gets direct funding from the government, it's difficult to be that advocacy body that pushes the boundary or the envelope of where it needs to be to advocate for us. So sometimes what happens, unfortunately, is the government wants to deal with one entity of First Nations people. And I had an interesting conversation with an MP before I was coming to this class. And she was asking me kind of the same question. Well, if not the AFN, then what? Like, how are 633 bands supposed to have, how are we supposed to listen to 633 different voices? Because that's what the AFN does. It serves as a one entity body for a one voice. But then I suggest to her, well, do all the provinces agree on everything? No. And if you looked at the map of the treaty territories, there's probably 15 different regions of different areas. And if you think about the different nations, like Cree, Blackfoot, Ojibwe, Mohawk, within that nation could be regional representation that serves the interest or voice of that particular nation. So my answer to you would be, the AFN hasn't done a good job of representing the voices of the people on the ground. Otherwise, if they did, we wouldn't have a movement right now. And not only that, but from chiefs that I've had the opportunity to listen to in various capacities, there's a disconnect even from the chief's level. So the AFN is doing things that aren't representing the chiefs and their direction. And that becomes problematic because the government sees that entity as the one-stop consultation shop kind of thing, which becomes problematic. That's unfortunate. It's too bad that it's gotten to that place, but when these things happen, you have to re-examine their purpose and their role and their effort to be able to push that envelope, like I said. Does that answer that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned about that the news was basically 30% correct and that they didn't have the coverage at all. I see that you're including video. considered. Many of the feeds from bystanders or other participants in these events that we have information available. And have you maybe considered forming a news group? I know this sounds almost political, but just even a very lightly structured thing that would be available as a center of clearing place, so people could go in there and say, what is the main reason?
That's a really good question and some really important points that you raised. And I think when we realized that the information that was being presented was really biased or untruthful, we knew that we started to encourage people to record what was happening. Not just to provide the truth of what was happening on that day, but also for their own safety. Because things that I never would have considered before, like agent provocateurs or people that are purposely placed in an event to disrupt, to cause and initiate violence could happen. I never thought about that before this, but that becomes a reality. And in some of the stories, like months after, we started to realize that we're being tracked by CSIS. Not surprisingly, right? Because it's a large movement, and you're challenging the government.
Well, it's also contending.
Yeah.
Are you being tracked openly, or?
Yeah, openly. So, for safety reasons, to provide unbiased, truthful news, we started to tell people to record what was happening at events, and we were very fortunate in June to have been given a free website by a very respectable marketing internet group firm. And the website, if you go on it now, the one that we had was non-functional. It wasn't as functional as the one that we have now. The one that we have now, you can go up and sign. You can sign up to be like a volunteer, you can enter in your event that you're having, you can sign up for the Twitter feed so you know what's happening. It's more interactive and informative. And our communications group is still growing. This is why it's important for more people to become involved so that we all do this work together, whether it's communications group, it's a research and education group, it's all these different little groups that are important in making and maintaining the function of what the purpose of what we're doing is. So that's a really good thing about the news group or idea that you're suggesting. I'll bring that back to the communications team. I know that we're trying to work on things, and we all do this volunteer, and we have limited people resources, but that's why it's important for people to join and participate in any way that they can.
It's actually not my question. It's a question coming from someone who's been listening to us this evening from BC.
Okay.
And he says, basically, what the question is what is the future of what you see as Indigenous people's role? Do they need more authority in government or over their own land or better representation? Like, what would be the... do you think it's key?
I think that we need to go back and begin to develop our own laws and governance systems in our own territories and to enforce that. And to enforce treaty more.
So bringing that relationship on the land, that has been born on the land and lived out on the land, into the written.
Yeah, I mean, some of the laws can be written to a very vague extent, but not to the extent that people really understand them, because you have to go back up. You have to go on the land to really understand that, and a lot of elders are concerned about writing some of these things down.
Mm-hmm.
But in generality, I think you can write very basic principles of how you can function in different areas, like land or family or land use, like things like that. So that's kind of how I see that. What was the other part of that question?
Yeah, that was it. Like, what is the role forward? More authority in government or over the land or better representation or those kind of things?
I see it more as like returning back to ancestral ways of knowing and starting from that place, and that informs the politics of what happens at the government level.
Right.
Maybe we can just take one more question then you would stay a few minutes and those who want to stay a few minutes, but then the rest of you would have to leave.
Last year, some people from Colima, they came up to discuss the Idaho Mar issue and how they felt about it from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And the one, I don't know if he was the chief, but he had like some kind of leadership role, and he was saying how, you know, he didn't think it was a good idea, how part of the Idaho
there's various perspectives on the approaches and strategies of the activities or actions used by people involved in the movement. So the one side is that perspective where outright blockades and types of activities like that are frowned upon. And we experienced backlash. I say we, but I wasn't there. I don't know if people were aware of the blockade situation that happened on Highway 2 just outside of Edmonton. Well, when that happened, the backlash on that was awful. That's when I received hate mail. And it's that perspective of your blocking traffic, you're disrupting my ability to get to work, you're inconveniencing me, how dare you, type of thing, right? So then we have to really re-examine those types of activities. And I always say that what we do should be and come from that place of who we are as Indigenous people that's respectful, that's peaceful, that's nonviolent, and within the confines of the law. I never advocate for any violence. However, it's not my place to say that people that use those kinds of methods to feel like they need to protect the land or what's theirs is wrong. That's not for me to be the judge of that. Because there are instances, for example, in BC, where there is lots of activity. And because BC is unceded land, it's not treaty land, it's still up for negotiation. Their land hasn't been dealt with. So they're in a situation where it's literally life and death. And people have chosen to use those methods to protect the little bit of land that they have and where their ancestors are buried. And that's not for me to say that, you know, that's wrong. That's just what they feel that they need to do that is best for them. So there's various ways to get attention. And, like, people in my area, we didn't do full-on blockades, but we called them traffic slowdowns.
Mm.
So we stopped the traffic, gave them pamphlets, gave them tea or coffee or hot chocolate, had a conversation. This is what's happening. This is why we're out here. Nice to meet you. On your way. So there's different methods to achieve something. Some people feel the need to be more that extreme, and others are okay with doing a rally out in front of Parliament or those types of things, right? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, with that, we wanted to thank Jensen.